This edition of Commodity Week was recorded Friday, March 28th.
Commodity Week is made possible by AgriGold Hybrids, funding agricultural programming as an additional service to the many AgriGold customers in the AM580 listening area. AgriGold, the corn specialists. More information is at AgriGold.com or at 800-262-7333.
The Prospective Plantings Report is coming Monday. Is it really the most important USDA crops report ever? Maybe. We'll try to find out today on Commodity Week. Welcome to Commodity Week. I'm Todd Gleason. Later in this half hour, we'll talk with Midco's Aaron Curtis. Our panelists today are Paul Cooley of ADM Investor Services out of Oakland, Illinois, Wayne Nelson of L&M Commodities in Newmarket, Indiana, and Jackie Vakes of Stuart Peterson Group out of West Bend, Wisconsin.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Let's open today's discussion with this question. We'll start with the quarterly grain stocks report. Given that great big number that came out Friday afternoon in the hogs and pigs report, can we expect a smaller corn and soybean number in the quarterly grain stocks report? Paul Cooley, ADM Investor Services.
With large hog numbers, it equates to good feed usage, and all the other main industrial use and exports are good. So there will be a bullish tone to the corn market.
Wayne Nelson of L&M Commodities.
Well, I'd have to agree with Paul. There's 2.5% more hogs than what they were looking for in the average trade estimates, and 2.5% more hogs eat a lot of corn, Todd. And we have seen very active export business and going along the way. The cheap dollar has made our commodities very valuable across the world.
And Jackie Vakes.
Well, and I certainly agree with the other guys. You know, one of the things I think that we maybe weren't thinking about when we were going to the hog and pig is that we have more cattle as well as hogs being fed down here that actually belong to the Canadian market.
The numbers for the hogs and pigs report, by the way, look like this: 107 currently, and 100% for placements, and 107 on market. So those numbers will play into the marketplace for the livestock on Monday morning when the trade opens. Here's the way the numbers in Chicago finish for the week, and we'll start with the hog market. April contract at 58.75 top, a low at 55.60, a settlement price down $1.77.5 from last week at 58.10. Live cattle, April contract 91.20 on the high, the low at 87.55, and a settlement price at 87.65, down 302.5 from last week. April feeders at $100.42.5. They were down 360 from last week. Jackie, is it time for producers to go ahead and lock in, livestock producers, that is, to go ahead and lock in more of their feed costs given the large number of hogs that might be out there?
Well, if they haven't actively been doing it up until now, they certainly need to take advantage of this push down that we just recently had. I don't see where any of this was really related to the commodity market in general, and we haven't seen very much of the money that we've lost in the futures price being passed on to the end user. So they need to jump on it in some way, shape, or form, cash being about the best opportunity.
Let's go back down to the quarterly grain stocks report. We're working with an average trade guess now of 7.078 for corn, soybeans at 1.355 billion, and wheat at 666. That's a $666 million. Are those numbers about what you think will show up given what you saw on Friday's report from Hogs and Pigs? Livestock numbers are good, export numbers are good, and ethanol usage remains good.
Well, I'll tell you, I don't agree with the average guess. My average guess is more like in the 6.3. We had a 4.1 billion bushel usage in the last quarter, and we haven't seen anything change other than we've increased the numbers of animals. And so I think somewhere in that 6.4 to 6.5 is pretty realistic.
For the corn number, average trade guess, of course, Paul Cooley at 7.078. The range, and Jackie's below it, from 6.95 to 7.254. For most of the traders, what do you think on the quarterly grain stocks report?
You know, Todd, there's still a ton of corn on the ground in the Midwest. And my hunch is that these numbers are pretty accurate. The hog number is a surprise. And my hunch is that I think the industry is going to go on in and contract. And I don't. There's nothing here in the livestock industry. And when somebody's whipped as hard as they will be, I think we're going to go on and see some contraction in the livestock market.
What do you see for a prospective plantings report on Monday morning, Wayne?
Well, Todd, I think that all the guesstimates basically out there and the way the market has reacted goes along with my way of thinking that we're going to see less corn acres than everybody's expecting or was expecting before, and probably some more switching over to bean acres. And I think that's what the pre-estimate guesses are telling us. But I think that if the government is honest with us, I think they'll even be more than the average guess, or the bean acres will be higher and the corn acres will be a tad lower.
Here's the way those numbers look like at this point. The USDA numbers from last year for corn in millions of acres, 93.6 million put in the ground last year, according to USDA. The average guess at this point for Monday morning's report, 87.387 million acres. Soybeans last year at 63.6 million. The average trade guess at 71.721. Jackie, do these vary much from what you're expecting on Monday?
Well, actually, my corn average guess was 86.5. I was at 72 million acres on beans, so I'm a little higher on beans, a little lower on corn. But I wouldn't be surprised if we came in both with pretty close numbers or relatively close numbers on this. I think that we have more wheat acres out there than what they're showing.
The big million-dollar question is on these acreages, is just how much acres of, let's say, of 60 million acres of pasture and 60 million acres for hay and cotton and other commodities will be shifted in new production, so to speak, into the mix. The general guess is that we're going to see at least 3.5 million more acres in here. The debate continues whether the government will catch these acres at this time. Unfortunately, it's usually June before they actually get those in. The general feeling here is the pedal has been pushed clear to the floor to get as many acres as humanly possible into production. Our guess is that the American farmer probably is going to probably err by not planting enough corn.
Are you bullish, friendly, or bearish the market at this time?
My opinion is that I'm very friendly corn, and I'm somewhat neutral to bearish wheat. I think that spread's going to come together. And on soybeans, my hunch is that the bean market is still going to be pretty strong. One of the first lessons I learned as a commodity man back with Tabor Grain Company is that if corn goes to $6.50 to $7, beans aren't going to go down very far. It follows.
Well, I'd have to agree with Paul. I think that, number one, we're talking about a possible just shortage of acres, of total acres, to put corn and beans out there. We are seeing a wet spring develop, which means later plantings, which generally doesn't mean as high of average yield when the year's done. We've got different people talking about drying out during the summer, the La Nina effect, a whole bit like that. But I don't think we can look at that as much as the total acres we're looking at. And I think that all in all, we've got a tight situation that's going to be very weather sensitive.
Well, I agree. And I think, you know, one of the big switches to beans that everybody talked about is the insurance price that we've got on it. And at least across most of the big states, when you talk to people, they put a lot of fertilizer on last year. Those acres aren't getting switched over to beans. So it's going to be the swing acre situation that we have to look at as to where we're going to pull extra acres out of. The people that we've got across the, just in general, pasture acres have been worked up all over the place. So it's hard to guess what's going to go into them. More than likely, would have figured might have been wheat. But, we won't know any of that. Even on Monday, we won't know for sure what's going to actually go into the ground. These are just planting intentions.
Here's what the numbers look like in Chicago that we do know about, and we'll take you through all of them now. May wheat this week, a high of $11.18¾. They're low at $9.67¾. The settlement price at $9.89, a penny and a half higher. July futures at $9.96. The new crop up 9.5 cents for the soft red. May corn, a high this week of $5.62¾, a low at $5.03¼, and a settlement price at $5.60½. They finished 53 cents higher from last week. December at $5.76¾, up 55½. May beans, $13.57, the high, the low at $12.10¾, and the settlement price up 60¼ cents at $12.67¼. November's at $11.59½. They were up 19½. What was the trade thinking about on Friday when they drop the bean market?
Well, a couple of things here, Todd. Let's just go over it very carefully. The phones never stopped ringing at the Oakland office today. And major concerns with these bigger trading ranges, higher margin requirements, and the general realization out here that we're going to probably have less corn and more soybeans planted, that the general idea here is that there's a lot of risk. And whenever it's not only risky for the American farmer, it's also risky for a hedge fund trader. And they decided to go to the sidelines. There is this strike issue in Argentina that's been very supportive to the marketplace. And there's generally the feeling is that we still have very, very strong commodities. But the other bottom line is that real cash in this real world is very short.
Speaking of the hedge fund traders, Jackie pointed out to me before we started the show that ConAgra will be purchased, or at least part of that company will be purchased by a very large hedge fund. What'd you make of that, Jackie? And what does it mean?
What does it mean? Well, I think it's just another way that the industry is morphing. I think maybe it means that they're making a run at trying to get tied to the physical before there's some type of government intervention. You know, we do have a FTC hearing coming up in April that's going to basically address the hedge funds and everybody else that's involved. But, you know, it's an interesting world, and I think what we're going to do is we're just going to be moving. We're going to be changing the faces of grain ownership.
I think from the industry sources that I personally talked to is they paid a very, very high price for the commodity.
But why would they do such a thing?
Somebody was willing to sell their business, and somebody was anxious to buy it. And they probably also are thinking that selling parts will pay more and earn more than the whole. But I think it's a case where it brought a very, very high price. And I'm going to say it also means that every grain elevator in the country probably smiled because their assets are also more valuable.
Right. Todd, the ConAgra's trading division had been one of their strongest divisions out there. So that means they had a very good staff and had done very well. And in many cases, we've seen over the past, we've seen grain companies, I believe it was Tabor, wasn't it, Paul, that sold just to get a hold of a valuable man called Bernie Kraft. We don't know that it wasn't something like that to get a hold of some of these fund managers.
Okay. I suppose I can believe that. Maybe I can actually believe that the hedge fund looked out and said, "Oh, there's one available. It's ConAgra. They're willing to sell that part of the grain division." And ConAgra said, "We can sell off portions of our company and make more money over time." I mean, that's fairly straightforward economic theory. But I tend to be cynical. Is there anything underneath this that might not be a good deal?
Well, one of the other things is it does give when you're in the grain business, it's sort of like the old adage, if you own a farm, you become respected in the community. And one of the things that these people do have is they're gaining a lot of knowledge in the industry that they might not have had if they didn't have ownership in the cash market. For example, they probably have better connections with the Chinese. Also, they have better connections in the export market. And one of the old tip-offs in traditional marketplace is just studying basis and demand and farmers' attitudes. Those all add up to a very successful operation and ideas. But once again, it's a very competitive market, and they're competing against some very large, well-financed competitors in the marketplace.
So maybe they bought the brain trust. Maybe they decided to buy it because of your first thoughts. Are there any other reasons that they might be into this marketplace? What bothers me about this to some extent is that a hedge fund actually bought grain elevators. And there were 144 facilities. I don't know how many of them are grain elevators or how many of them are not. But is there a reason to be bothered by that? I don't have any real reason to be bothered other than it seems that a hedge fund shouldn't own an elevator, but maybe I'm wrong.
Well, I have to say it bothered me as soon as I saw it. That's why I pointed it out to you, because you have to say to yourself, why does a hedge fund want to be involved in the physical grain business?
All right. We'll leave it there.
To make money.
to make money. Well, I think maybe Paul's on to something, that they bought the Brain Trust and that they've become respected in the community and part of the community. Or on the flip side, your first idea was that they'll buy it and sell it all off in pieces and they'll make money on it that way. So one of those two things could happen, and then there are other ideas that are
that's my question. You know, I guess in the past when we looked at like ADM, we look at all the other guys, we figure they're in it for the long haul. How long is the hedge fund really in it for?
Any final word, Paul, before we take our break?
It's one of the things that I think that we have to be very respectful of here in this marketplace is we're all very concerned with the price volatility, and we all, keep hopeful that our customers and farmers and elevators survive this kind of turmoil in the marketplace.
You're listening to Commodity Week from the University of Illinois. I'm your host, Todd Gleason. We'll be back in just 2 minutes when we'll talk with Aaron Curtis of Midco. He's located in Bloomington, Illinois. Visit us at WILLAG.org.
I'm Steve Hilberg with the Midwestern Regional Climate Center, located at the Illinois State Water Survey in Champaign. Colder than normal weather settled in across Illinois this week, coming in on the heels of a storm that brought some snow and snow flurries to the northern half of the state early this week. Temperatures range from 3 degrees below normal in northern Illinois to as much as 6 degrees below normal in far southern Illinois. Briefly mild weather around midweek disappeared as a cold front sagged through Illinois. The first half of the week was generally dry, but by Wednesday, heavy rain was falling once again across southern and southeastern Illinois. Rain was not as heavy as last week, but with the saturated ground, it doesn't take much to make conditions worse. More than 2.5 inches of rain fell in portions of southeastern Illinois by Thursday morning as low pressure moved along the front. The rain shifted to the north on Thursday, giving southern Illinois a short break from the wet weather. The weather system hung up in the Midwest will bring us wet weather through at least early next Tuesday, and in that time, much of Illinois could pick up 1 to 2 inches of rain, with central and southern Illinois possibly getting more. High pressure moving in behind this system will give us 36 to 48 hours of dry weather, but by next Thursday, another low moving in from the central plains will bring another round of showers and thunderstorms to the state. However, rainfall amounts look to be less than what falls early in the week. Temperatures next week will be running near to below normal. For the Midwestern Regional Climate Center in Champaign, I'm Steve Hilberg.
I'm Todd Gleason. You're listening to Commodity Week. Our panelists in studio are Jackie Vakes of the Stuart Peterson Group out of West Bend, Wisconsin, Paul Cooley of ADM Investor Services out of Oakland, Illinois, and Wayne Nelson of L&M Commodities out of New Market, Indiana. Our guest today is Aaron Curtis of Midco out of Bloomington, Illinois. Hi, and thanks for joining us, Aaron, this afternoon.
Good to be here, Todd.
Tell me your view of the marketplace, and as a merchandiser, where do we go from here?
Well, I guess you'd have that you've got to have a kind of slightly friendly build, especially on the farm market today. Being able to trade up 7-8 cents here today in spite of two months down, it's mean. But I don't know if you look at the report on Monday morning if you're going to be able to find enough acres to create a bearish scenario for any of the commodities here moving forward.
Aaron, it's always a pleasure to talk to you. I have a lot of respect for you and a nice tip of the hat that you're taking this afternoon and talking to us. Help us with what the percent the farmer has left in corn and soybeans as far as ownership, your opinion, and also what percent does he have sold for new crop?
Well, I think for old crop, I think it depends on their location in Illinois. I think especially if you have northern Illinois, where obviously they had they're even heavier corn acres than we are in central Illinois. I think we've still got maybe 20-25% more crops by. I think it's a lot less than that on beans. We have customers up in that area or even throughout Illinois that have less than 10% of their beans left to buy. New crop wise, it doesn't seem like a big percentage of new crop beans have been bought, but you see some areas where they've gotten 25% to 30% of the new crop corn bought, and obviously in some circumstances, you know, that could be heavier or lighter depending on you know, how aggressive farmers have been in the past.
Hi, Aaron. Yeah, this is Wayne. I'd like to ask you what you're thinking about for what basis levels will actually be to the farmer during wheat harvest, number one, and then possibly looking ahead to fall corn and beans.
Well, I think as far as wheat harvest basis is going to be, I think if the board continues to trade up at these levels, we're going to continue to look at fairly weak wheat basis levels. You know, you have some historically low wheat basis value, especially southern Illinois, soft red wheat. Depending on how some of these wet conditions end up playing out on the wheat wheat harvest as we move forward, I think you're going to see a tremendous amount of soft red winter wheat supplies available to the market once we get to that May time frame. I typically keep basis levels a little weak as we move forward. However, the futures market might have a little bit to play with that if we can get that a little bit under control. However, that's a pretty big if right now. I think as we move forward on corn and beans, you know, you expect maybe some average levels here as we move forward in the spring. Typically, we get the farmers in the field, get their minds on something else. We can see some improvement in basis as we move forward here. And, of course, the big if, just like in the wheat, is what the future market does. And if only we knew what that was going to be.
Hi, Aaron. I'd like to, you know, we know that there's been a tremendous amount of cash pressure created by HTAs. And, you know, I'd just like your opinion as to what you think. Do you think it's likely that we could see a total abandonment of the HTA program?
Well, I think we already have. I mean, some individual elevators have already moved away from that. I mean, you know, especially following the lead of some of the big multinationals where you're, you know, you're not necessarily buying any cash grain more than 12 months out and some basis-only contracts, you know, further out here. I think we're going to continue to see elevators move away from absorbing that kind of risk, and I think that's a trend that's going to continue forward, especially in this futures environment we see now.
Is the implication that it won't come back and that producers will have to get used to either hedging on the board or using options?
Well, I think that's going to be the case. I think you're going to see, you know, this trend towards the elevator telling the farmer to go open his own brokerage account and fund it himself. I mean, you know, moving some of that risk away from the elevator and back onto the farmer himself. You know, I think that trend is going to continue in this environment.
Aaron, you've had two hats on before. One, you know, you're very well aware of the agriculture community, and of course you're in the grain hedging business there with Midco. What about the concept, if we do go on into this tremendous volatility and higher price level plateau, about, you know, the Department of Agriculture or the Fed making additional funds for hedging purposes? What's your take on some idea like that? And I've heard this, you know, recently as well.
Well, I guess I don't really have necessarily an opinion on that, Paul, at this point. I mean, I think one of the things moving forward here, you know, we talk about this CFTC going to have this a forum out on April 26th about this, as we move forward, about the fund's involvement in the market and lack of convergence moving forward and some of the credit crisis we've seen in some of the elevator business, at least the money cruncher we're seeing. So I think that's a nice move in the right direction. At least we can get some dialogue started in that forum. I don't know if there's going to be any easy answers. I don't think there are, but at least we need to get some dialogue started here because, you know, obviously these last 2 years have been kind of stressful on the country elevator.
Is Midco going to send somebody out on the 22nd of April to that meeting or at least send comments to the CFTC?
I'm sure we'll have some comments, and, you know, we've had some members of our organization that are involved in the National Grain and Feed Association, so, you know, we've develop some dialogue on that, and I think we'll continue to do that.
Yeah, what's the biggest problem that you're facing as in the grain industry on the front that CFTC will follow? And one of the primaries that they're talking about is convergence. Are there other things?
Well, I think also as we move forward, you know, obviously the grain industry was not a big fan, to say it lightly, of increased limits. Of course, you know, 30-cent limits on corn and 60-cent limits on beans that we started today. It could be a concern here as we move forward, you know, especially considering the weatherman has not played much role in this market at all, and probably will as we move into the summer. But, you know, I think the lack of convergence is probably the biggest issue that the country elevator is working on, and I think it's going to be a hot topic here as we move forward this summer.
Well, I guess the question then is on the lack of convergence. Has the country elevator not taken the HTA? Is that one of the reasons? I mean, does that just take that risk off of them?
Yeah, I think we know the multinationals have started this with trying to put some of that risk back on the country elevator, and I think the country elevator is going to start putting some of that risk back on the farmer. And I think in this environment, you know, that's going to be a new paradigm that we're going to be dealing with here is trying to minimize our risk moving forward. And and I think it's going to be an interesting change for the country, for the farmer and also for the country grain elevator here as we move forward. And I think it's something that we're going to have to kind of get used to as we move forward here.
Aaron, let's put the crystal ball in front of you here. Are the farmers too bearish, too bullish, or just about right in their market opinion here?
Well, we can kind of get a feel about that a little bit here, Paul, as we move forward, because we kind of can see, you know, what the country elevator is buying here. And obviously in the last 3 weeks, it slowed considerably, and a lot of that had to do with last week, too, when the market fell considerably where it did when we saw beans trade, you know, $4 off their high. And now I think the farmer's a little bit confused on what to do here. He doesn't want to sell too much more, considering this thing could obviously be bullish, you know, moving into the summer is, you know, depending on what the weather does. But then again, you know, he hates to pass up on some of these prices that he's never seen before. So I think he's a little bit confused on what to do. But I will tell you, he's been pretty quiet over the last few weeks.
One of the things, Aaron, that I was watching pretty close, you know, we looked at the bean-to-corn ratio on the futures price. And when you look at today, as we know, we closed at a 2-to-1.
Right.
Versus a 2.5-to-1 on March 1st when the survey actually came about. So, you know, in your opinion, do you think that the farmers still may push more acres into corn and that the report on Monday really isn't going to mean very much?
Well, I think it's going to change from what we see Monday. I think the weather could be a bigger factor in that as we move forward. I don't know, in my experience anyway, I don't know from here on out anyway if price is going to determine that a lot here as we move forward. I think the weather's going to play a lot to do with that, and I still think in central Illinois the farmer likes to plant corn, and he will if the weather cooperates.
Aaron, thanks much.
Thank you.
Aaron Curtis is with Midco in Bloomington, Illinois, joining us here on Commodity Week. Our panelists in studio are Paul Cooley of ADM Investor Service. A final word from you?
It's always a pleasure to be here, and a tip of the hat to my co-panel members for their thoughtfulness and foresight into the marketplace.
Wayne Nelson of L&M Commodities.
Well, we got a big report coming out Monday morning, but I think shortly after that, unless we see some real surprises, we're going to start watching the weather real close.
And Jackie Vakes of Stewart Peterson.
Well, and I couldn't agree more. I think for most of us, I think we'll be happy to see this report behind us, and we'll be able to get our feet on the ground and find out where we're really going.
And that wraps up this week's edition of Commodity Week. Something to keep in mind, you can read an article from the University of Illinois researchers in the Friday edition of the New York Times. Look on the front page of the business section. I'm Todd Gleason.
Commodity Week is made possible by AgriGold Hybrids, funding agricultural programming as an additional service to the many AgriGold customers in the AM580 listening area. AgriGold, the corn specialists. More information is at agrigold.com or at 800-262-7333.